Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to a February 13th segment from the Kentucky Water Fuel Museum. With us today is David Baer, owner of Liquid Gold LLC. And David, you are with us, are you not?
Yes, I am here.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now, I've been looking at your website and quite an interesting product that you're offering, and that is a biodiesel producing algae plant. Is that correct?
Yes. We started out building biodiesel plants and then realized that we needed fuel, the oil for it, and we started research into algae. And since that time, have developed an in-house algae production plant that is continuous flow. It works indoors. It's not an outdoor unit. Doesn't require any external ponds or things like that to run. So,
quite amazing. And capable of producing a large volume of biodiesel.
Yeah, that was the whole idea behind it, is we're having a hard time finding feedstock. And, of course, you know pretty well that a lot of the feedstock's being bought up and pulled away from the smaller producers. And a lot of our plants that we've built and the one that we have that we're part owner in is difficult to find the fuel for it.
Now, perhaps for those who are unaware of what a feedstock is, perhaps you could explain that.
Oh, yeah. It's the oil that you'd actually use to make biodiesel from, and generally it's called feedstock because it came from soybean or cottonseed or canola, those types of seeds where it would be pressed with a large heavy-duty press to squeeze out the oil, and then you'd use that oil as the catalyst to make biodiesel.
Now, how do you explain the fact that there is oil in a seed? Why should there be oil in a seed?
I guess God put it there. That's the best I can explain.
Well, I mean, what purpose does it serve in the seed?
Well, I'm not real sure that there's a protein that comes out of the seed from the oil as you're feeding animals. So a lot of your protein comes from that. There's a lot of things that oil can be used for. You know, it's a lubricant in the body, too, as well. And there's a lot of things that you can actually claim that would be a reason for having oil in there. I prefer to think that the maker had set a reason for having this here at a time when we needed it to produce fuel for our world whenever we're running out of petroleum-based stuff. But,
well, that's an interesting explanation. There are people who have been advocating hemp oil as a source of, I guess, biodiesel. Is that correct?
Well, sure. Anything like that would be great. There's jatropha. A lot of plants are being planted right now in Arizona. There's a great big, almost 100-mile-long tract in Pakistan. They planted to actually bring jatropha seed to production, too, because it's a very high oil content. Those are all great things, but the problem is the world is using more than we can physically produce as an agricultural product. On farmlands or lands like in this case in Pakistan, they're building they're putting their plants alongside a railway, which is basically wasted land. You know, it's not being used for anything except the railroad track, and that's great, but you're still not going to come close to producing the amount of oil we need for biodiesel in this world or for any type of fuel.
Okay, so you're saying that if a person plants a crop with a view to extracting oil for biodiesel from it,
mm-hmm,
that they're basically wasting their time or wasting the resources that should be used for...
Well, I'm not saying it's wasted because there's a lot of farmland out there that's not being farmed right now. And it's very productive to put that land to use, making it for fuel. But a good example of that, if we were to take all the farmland in the United States right now that's available, including the land that would be used for farming for grain and things for food, and turn it into a biodiesel production operation where they're making, even canola, which is close to 50% oil, we'd be at less than 10% need right now for our country, and our needs are growing every year. So where do you go from there? And that's what we're trying to attack, as well as many other people around the world, is how do we produce a fuel that's a regenerable fuel that doesn't require a lot of space and doesn't require a lot of land and agricultural space.
Now, repeat what that 10% was. Did you say we would...
That would be 10% of our need right now in this currently in this country for fuel.
Really? Across the board, fuel?
Right. Mm-hmm.
I see.
So it's very sobering when you think about the fact that we're going to run out of petroleum Monday and that we really haven't come up with anything yet. I know there's a lot of good technologies being produced, ours being one of them also. That being said, we need to continue to grow and continue to find ways to harness energy and make it more productive for the whole world, you know.
Now, what you're recommending then, as opposed to growing a crop in the field to produce oil from which biodiesel can be made, is that you can take a tank full of algae that you're growing yourself from, what do you use, some kind of spores or something? Or
yeah, we start out with a supply of spores in a tank that then feeds our production line. And the production line's basically a tube-type arrangement that goes through the plant that's artificially lit. And it takes less space to do that than it does to grow it outside. We're actually about a 50-to-60-to-1 ratio on production in the plant inside of a building. Say, for instance, and there's a lot of buildings in this country right now. We have a lot in our area that was basically a textile plant or a steel mill or those types of things that we can put these units inside of since they don't require external lighting. And that utilizes those facilities that are now derelict in a region where people are needing employment or needing some place to go hang their hat to make a living, and we're putting those folks back to work. The farmers are already getting a fair share, I think, because they're being taxed as much as they can to produce. And obviously, if we continue to use natural sources for fueling, we're going to drive fuel price or food prices so high that we can't afford to eat. So,
right.
That's why we went to this route, was to try to maximize not only the amount of fuel that we can make per acre, but also maximize space that's being wasted right now that's actually dilapidating.
Okay, so perhaps you could explain the process. So we're taking a tank.
Mm-hmm.
And we're obviously filling it with water. Any particular water?
In our case, it's a brine solution, yeah.
A brine solution, mm-hmm. Meaning water with salt added to it?
Yeah, slightly salty, yeah.
Okay, so you're trying to mimic perhaps a marsh?
The algae that we're using is more of a saltwater solution algae than it is a freshwater. There are freshwater solution algae that you can use as well. They just don't produce as much oil per pound of algae. And so, therefore, we've chosen specific strains to use for that.
Okay. And when we talk about algae, are we talking about, like, for instance, here in Kentucky, when a person's driving in the summertime, they'll see many ponds that have what I think is typically called a scum layer on top.
Yeah, that scum's your friend now. I used to try to kill it out of my swimming pools, and I find it out it's my friend.
We have to come up with a T-shirt that says something about you scum.
Yeah.
You're my best friend.
Yeah. There you go. But the nice part about that is that algae, even in your pool, had a very small amount of oil in it. You could get 2-3% oil out of the algae. And there's actually some technology that's being done at one of the universities up here in Virginia that they feel like they can take normal algae, which would be the low-grade algaes, and get a fairly high level of oil out of it. But they're using a chemical process, so I'm not sure what that ends up with yet. Nobody's been allowed to see that, so... But anyways, the algae oils that we're using are then fed into our process where it goes through tubing that gets exposed to light, and it goes through there very slowly. And by the time it comes out the end of the process, your algae has grown heavily because of all the nutrients and gases and things that are being introduced into it to make it grow rapidly. And then it comes out the end, you press the oil with a high-pressure press to get the oil out of the algae cake, and then, of course, you have algae left to feed the animals, which is very important, too. So
animals appreciate the algae as a food?
Oh, yes. It's a very high protein, almost 50% protein. There's a lot of minerals and vitamins and things in algae. It's probably the most complete food you can get, even for humans. It would be very important. A lot of folks today are taking algae supplements because they're real high in nutrients. Doesn't taste very good if you eat it just by itself, but...
Yeah, in other words, this blue-green algae that everyone's recommending.
Sure, yeah.
Now, what about the nutritional aspect for the animals after having pressed out the oil?
Well, we're not doing a solvent extraction, so the product coming out is very pure. The idea behind that is if you use solvents, you've got things left over in the product, and we don't believe in that. Most of your press cakes today made from soy, made from cottonseed and things are all using hexane for extraction. Well, that hexane doesn't get all out of the product, so you're actually eating it when you eat the animal's food, you know, the meat or the milks and things.
And nobody's really talking about that, are they?
No, that's really not something that they bring up much. But anytime you can do an all-natural product, you're better off.
Yeah, I want to know how much hexane I've got in my body from eating.
You probably don't
food.
Want to know.
You know, how come we're not being told that that's actually taking place?
Well, there's a lot of things you aren't being told. It's just because the industry doesn't want to talk about it. But
yeah.
Until
but it's
different.
Awful, really, that
sure.
Means are being utilized for a lot of things that are harmful to the environment, harmful to our own health.
Absolutely.
So what my question was, though, is after extracting the oil from the algae, it is still a valuable food without the oil.
Oh, very valuable. Yeah, well, we can eat algae, too. I mean, it's like anything else. If you get used to eating it, the taste of it, you could get over it and eat that product.
Isn't that
probably
what Soylent Green was supposed to be?
Actually, I think that was supposed to be human remains.
Yeah, but I mean, it was purportedly algae,
yeah.
Wasn't it? And then they found out it was human.
Yeah, that was quite a movie. But the idea behind algae is that it's such a complete product as far as nutrition. The animals actually are so much better off eating that. But you can't feed them 100% algae either. They'd be getting too much protein, they'd be getting really fat, and they'd be getting too much energy and stuff. But there again, everything that's done in the farming industry is all a mixture of items that they feed to the cows. They'll feed part cottonseed, part soy, part of the things, you know, to build the fat levels and proteins up. So this is a mixture that could be added to that as a very high supplement. In fact,
yeah.
It's a very expensive supplement.
Wow. So there's actually money to be made on the waste from this process.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Algae right now is going between $300 and $400 a ton, so it's a pretty good product, whereas, for instance, soy is about $260 to $280 a ton. Cottonseed is about $240 a ton. Various different products out there that they use for feeding cows. So
it's actually higher.
It's actually more expensive, but it's a much higher nutrient, and it takes less of it to do what they need. So
isn't that something? So we're starting with a brine solution. We're adding this algae base. It's sort of like adding yeast to bread or something, huh?
Yeah, so to speak. You're taking an algae stock that you built up, and you're seeding the production line with it. And, of course, your stock is continually building as you're growing the stock in the seeding ponds. But that becomes a very high growth rate as it goes through the facility then, so that you end up with some big chunks of algae at the end that you press and get your oil out of.
And from start to finish, how many minutes or hours are we talking about?
From the time it goes into production line, it's 12 hours till it comes out. It's a fairly slow process, but it's better than doing it in a pond basis, because you're looking at a pond will double algae about every 24 hours, and ours were doubling the algae in about every 2 hours, and makes a major difference in your growth rate.
Oh, yeah. So in a poor country where of course, producing this much fuel, even a poor country could afford to do this, but assuming that a person was just a poor farmer who had some ponds and was to try to extract algae from his own ponds and press it and produce, I mean, is that conceivable that a person could do that?
Oh, absolutely.
And with some equipment that's available from your company?
Well, we wouldn't do it for the pond stuff. We do it for the industrial basis.
But I mean,
there
you
are
sell
people out
everything
there that do
from
pond
the start
operation.
To finish. Don't you sell components also?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
So in other words, they could get the press from you or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, we have components for all that. But let me give you another example. Out in Arizona, they're buying up some land out there to do the algae production in seed ponds, where they just grow it in the pond and then harvest it out of the pond every day. And a good advantage for them is they don't get a lot of rain. They get a lot of sunshine. It stays warm most of the time. The things that they're looking for in a pond production, they're using land that wouldn't be used otherwise, because you couldn't grow crops, normal crops, on that land because it's too sandy, it's too hot, it's too everything, but it's perfect for algae. Now, there's areas in the country like that they could grow in ponds algae for production for biodiesel. The only bad thing is it's a little slower than doing it in an industrial setting, but it's still utilizing land that would be wasted, and that's good.
And it's not like you're using up employee time either.
No. Huh?
It's doing its own work without you having to really tend to it.
Right. It's pretty much self-producing. Now, you have to put some protection over top of the ponds to keep the ponds from getting contaminated with other algae or bacteria and stuff. But short of that, it's not a whole lot of production or a lot of cost in making a pond like that, because it can be very shallow and don't have to have a lot of depth as far as, you really don't want a lot of depth, period, because the sun only penetrates so far down into an algae bed. So.
Yeah, what's surprising to me is the volume. It sounds like, in looking over your website, that there's a tremendous volume of oil that is then turned into biodiesel that comes from one of these ponds or one of your tanks.
It will become a major item as time goes on. There's not an awful lot of algae oil right now in production anywhere in the world. It's starting to happen, and that's probably the wave of the future for biodiesel. Biodiesel is such a clean product. That was why I originally got into biodiesel. I got a friend of mine that introduced me to it, and we got excited about it and built our own biodiesel plant. And we were producing about 20,000 gallon a day of biodiesel, but we were doing it from waste oil and from chicken fat, and that was a very good product at the time. But then times have changed as far as regulations and how you can produce biodiesel and how the quality it has to be. And so therefore, we started looking into the research of how do we build better biodiesel plants. Well, one thing led to another, and we started building biodiesel plants for people. And that became our major goal, was to find ways to get biodiesel plants in our country to start making fuel for replacement of diesel fuel, of the petroleum-based diesel fuel, try to find ways to make a feedstock product to be able to support the biodiesel plants, and then, of course, anything we can do to support the industries out there that are doing alternate sources. So
does that mean that Liquid Gold was the first to be doing this with algae? Or?
Probably I wouldn't say that. There's people out there that have been building algae ponds, and there's a few people that have built some algae bagging systems, and there's various different sources. I think we're probably the first one to do it indoors.
I mean, as far as for biodiesel, you're not the first.
No, we're not the first ones to do it for biodiesel, but we're the first ones to do a production facility indoor,
where it doesn't require a pond outside.
Yeah, and without having a lot of space to use. The space, for instance, to generate 60 gallons of soybean oil for biodiesel is, you're going to do an acre, basically, to get 60 gallons. 60 pounds, that'd be a gallon of biodiesel. I was right first time, I think, 60 gallons. Anyways, we're looking at about 50 times that production on an acre per year. And so the difference, as far as the land space used for production output is phenomenally different. And so we're trying to find ways to make those production levels go up in the space used, because obviously land's getting more and more difficult to find. The populations are growing. Everything's being eaten up. Our farming lands are being eaten up. Everything that we're doing out there is counterproductive to trying to have some type of agricultural-based fuel product. Even ethanol is very difficult to generate, because it takes so many acres of corn to get a gallon of fuel, and it goes on and on. So somebody has to work on it, and I'm hoping we can find a lot of other people that are interested in doing it as well.
Well, that's great. Now, am I to understand then, you said that there's tubing that runs around the ceiling of the structure or the building that this...
No, it runs in a vertical operation.
Okay, so it doesn't require that much horizontal
plane. Footprint's very low, yeah.
And let's see now. I'm looking at your actual catalog, and it sounds like you have an entire system up for sale here. The model.
Yeah, we build everything from very small biodiesel plants, something capable of doing maybe 2,000 or 3,000 gallon a day, all the way up to 30 million gallon a year plants. We've been involved in this long enough, you know, that...
How long is that?
Actually 4.5 years now.
Okay, and that's a long time in the
That's a long time in the biodiesel industry. But it's something that, you know, you don't learn from books. It's something that you learn from experimentation and developing systems and finding out what works and what doesn't. And one of my partners is very tied into the biodiesel board, and so we get a lot of information about what's coming up and what's going on and who's changing what and what the laws are and how they're changing. And so we try to keep up with those things to keep all of our producers abreast of the law changes as well as new technology they're going to have in place to meet changes in specifications. Because like a year ago, we had some major spec changes on biodiesel on what's required to meet the code, and there's more of them coming. And so we're looking at those things to see how we can meet the needs ahead of time instead of being behind the curve on it all the time, where people are trying to catch up and get their plants back in spec.
Yeah, I see. Now, we do have a caller, regular. He's been a guest and a caller on this show. His name is Larry Jarbo. He's a county commissioner in St. Mary's County in Maryland.
Okay.
Larry, are you with us?
Yeah, hi. How are you, James?
Well, hello, Larry.
David.
Good. How are you?
Yeah, it sounds like you've provided the solution for cleaning up the Chesapeake Bay. That's our problem, is too much algae, the nutrient levels and the algae.
We'd love to have it.
Boy, you know, we can and we can mount it on some ships, you know, and
sure.
And be cycling through and basically, what a great way to clean up the bay.
Well, strangely enough, we're talking about doing something similar to that in Vietnam right now. We've got an office over there that is looking into our office is trying to develop a way to pull a lot of this hydrina. I think that's how you pronounce hydrina. I'm terrible at words.
Hydrilla, maybe?
Hydrilla, there you go.
Okay,
out of
yes.
The river over there, and go ahead, and it's about 40% oil, so we'd be able to press that and do it. And so we're working very hard to develop a program to do that in Vietnam. The same thing can happen here in the U.S. because most of your algaes or the seaweeds and things that are out in the ocean are fairly high levels of oil.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very good product for harvesting. It would pay people to go out and harvest it, to bring it in and have it pressed for us. So.
Well, I'm thinking of putting a sign up on my pond that says scum for sale.
There you go.
You know, it would be something people would actually buy, wouldn't it?
It will in the future, I'm sure. That's what we have to do, is get some areas set up around the country that will take that type of a product and crush it and make the oil out of it. It's the same thing that we're doing now with oil coming out of the fryers at restaurants. You know, for years and years, these folks had to pay people to take off that oil and get rid of it. Well, now they're getting paid for their oil because it's useful and it has a product value. And that's basically the same thing we're looking at here. All that is not useful at this time, but if we put a system in place to collect it and press it, it becomes a valuable commodity.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, one question, David, because this is one problem I found with biodiesel production, is how do you deal with the ethanol or the methanol? Do you have to secure that, or do you make it yourself out of the product?
Well, methanol, all the plants that I know of buy their methanol, but it's recovered from the operation as much as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
You're still going to have some methanol that gets used in each gallon you produce. Of course, methanol is a reproducible resource as well, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But the methanol that's coming out of the recovery systems goes back into the operation of making more biodiesel. Now, what biodiesel gets produced is going to have some methyl esters in there that are part of the biodiesel, and then some of it's been bonded with the glycerin to make glycerin, you know, out
mm-hmm.
of the fats. So you lose some of your methanol in production, usually about 12 to 15%, depending on the oil. But everything else gets reused. We don't have any going into the atmosphere. So if that's what, I'm not sure quite what your question.
Okay. Yeah, it was a problem with securing enough, because methanol is expensive. I mean, it's not cheap, and that's a cost. But
mm-hmm.
if you're able to get it back, that's important. That helps.
Yeah, you recover about 5 to 7% of your methanol use in a plant like that. So it does help a lot. And again, methanol is a renewable resource. You can use actually ethanol. You can use methanol. It's a renewable resource, and there's a lot of countries around the world that are starting to produce methanol because of the need for biodiesel, and we're seeing a lot of that coming to fruition here very quickly.
Well, and the other end with the biodiesel, and James and I have talked about this because I run a small sawmill, and I just got off a diesel forklift. I drove my little diesel rabbit truck home to get on eBay for a second. And basically, you can hydrogen boost diesel and offset your consumption by a major amount. So that's, you know, getting back to the water fuel, you combine hydrogen on demand with biodiesel, and you've got a very efficient system that cleans up the emissions to virtually zero. So that's could extend the, you know, we could go to pure biodiesel and get away from Middle Eastern oil completely, and that would be a wonderful opportunity.
Oh, you I agree with me 100%. That's we've been after that type of technology every place we can. We're working on some technologies too to try to help with some of the environment. Anything out there right now that can help boost mileage, that can help boost production facilities, to help get higher efficiencies, we're looking for it and trying to implement them as fast as we can.
Well, you might want to talk with a gentleman named Jonathan Goodwin. They call him the Motorhead Messiah, and he's hydrogen boosting biodiesel. Basically, he's making Hummers. He puts biodiesel engines into them, diesel engines, and he's getting like 36 miles to the gallon on these big Hummers.
Wow, good for him.
And he's got the stars, literally Neil Young, you know, remember from Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young,
and
Governor Schwarzenegger all having their cars. So he's reaching across political spectrums, and that's very important, that this is a nonpartisan issue. It's for everybody.
Sure.
So might check
aware
it.
Of it. I'm sorry. David is also involved in hydrogen electrical generation.
Oh, fantastic.
And perhaps we could spend the last couple minutes talking about that. Anything you'd like to share with us on that, David?
Yeah, I could share a little bit since this stuff isn't completely patented protected yet. But we're working on a plant right now to run water-powered hydrogen systems for electric generation. And it's a supplemented system, too, as well. But basically, I think eventually down the road, we'll be able to do 100% hydrogen.
Those are
project goals we have. It's not feasible to do cars with it, but it is for a large production facility where you're running electric, and because we need the steam and we need a lot of things to go with it. So, but it's good for the energy environment because we can actually make electric cheaper than what we're doing it today. So it would be a plus-plus situation all around the world here.
And you could offset from either the coal plants, which are real dirty, or the nuclear plants, which have a waste problem, and basically have a clean technology that people could support.
Yeah, absolutely. And the power companies are endorsing it because of the fact that we're going to be selling back to them, and they sell it to the grid, so they aren't upset about it at all.
Good.
Is there a website that someone could go to on that?
No.
Not yet. Okay, but your website for your biodiesel from algae is liquidgoldllc.com.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, look, it's been really nice talking. I'm sure there's more to discuss in a future program, especially about your development of the hydrogen electrical generation system.
Mm-hmm.
So I thank you both for joining us today and look forward to developing this discussion further.
Well, thank you, James, for having me on board. Nice to talk to you, too, Larry. Look forward to hearing from you some more.
Well, I hope we can get you over to the East Coast, David.
Well,
we have
a biodiesel plant we're building up in Maryland right now, so if you want to give me a call, our website has our phone number on it.
Oh, looking forward to it. I'll be calling right away.
Yeah, but
well,
Larry,
thank you very much.
You could just mention, just briefly, because we do have just a few seconds left, tell them about the June event on your property.
Yeah, we're going to have the end of June. It's called the Jarboe's Mill event, and you can look it up on the Internet if you, JARBOE'S, MILL, do a Google search, you'll find it. And we're putting together some of the best alternative technologies, real solutions. And it sounds like you need to be there because you've got a real solution.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about that.
And that's
fantastic.
The last weekend in June.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
So put it on the calendars.
Will do. Thank you very much, Larry.
And okay. Everybody's invited, and what we want to do is it's no cost, just show up.
Well, that's cheap enough.
Big show and tell event.
Yeah, it will be nice to see more of Liquid Gold and their system at that event if possible.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, listen, you all take care, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
See y'all later.
Bye-bye.